Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Boxing Podcast. I'm your host Dev Sarni, we are sponsored by 32 Red, and with me is a man whose romance knows no bounds. Yes, that's right, with Valentine's Day coming up, I bring you boxing's very own Romeo. It is, of course, Mr. Steve Lillis. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Dev. I won't call you my Juliet, that would be rough. I'll just call you my pal.
Good, I'll take that, I'll take pal. Have you actually got anything lined up Valentine's Day-wise? Any treats for Mrs. Lillis?
You know what? I took her shopping last week. There's a card in the cupboard here, which she found.
And, oh, no.
I've tried to book a restaurant about an hour ago, and I think it's a bit too late for anywhere decent. So it looks like a Marks and Spencer's Love Heart sausage.
Lucky Mrs. Lillis. I'll tell you what, though. These cards, they're absolutely sickly. Because obviously I've got a card, but I had to go through so many to just pick the one that didn't make me feel sick. It's so awful, some of the stuff that's in there. You can't escape it. It's like, oh, there's only three things important. You, me, and us. Oh, bore off. It's too, maybe I'm just getting old. It's too much, though, isn't it, Steve?
That one is up there with you don't play boxing.
Oh, you, me, and us. Anyway, before we get going, let's talk about last weekend's boxing. On Box Nation, there was Ramirez versus Zepeda, WBC World Super Lightweight title. How did you see it? Ramirez got the decision, didn't he?
Yeah, Ramirez got the decision. It was a close one. Very, very good fight. Two good operators, not all-time greats, but Ramirez is a good world champion. I think really good, a very good fighter will beat him. Zepeda started well, and you thought he was gonna run away with it, but Ramirez just about got it on that last round. It was nothing between them in the end, and I feel a bit sorry for Zepeda because I think he could be one of these perennial contenders, nearly men, who leaves boxing pretty bitter because he had that fight against Terry Flanagan that ended after two rounds because of a dislocated, I think it was his left shoulder. And then the other night, he's gone into the backyard of the champion, Ramirez, and lost a real close one where he may have thought he did enough to win it. There was nothing in it. It was so hard to call, but he would have gone away feeling hard done by. And I hope he gets another chance, Zepeda. He's a good, solid fighter, quite heavy-handed, and he pushed Ramirez all the way. But what about that crowd in the Save Mart Arena? 14,000 people going nuts, mainly from the farming community of the central California and the valleys there. And the atmosphere looked something special. It looked like a Ricky Hatton night.
Is he the kind of the Warrington of Fresno? Is that what we're calling Jose Ramirez?
Hey, you could call him the Warrington of Fresno, the Hatton of Fresno. He's, you know, he's got that rarity that you can count on one hand in recent years how many American world champions have sold tickets like that.
Yeah.
You had Kelly Pavlik. Crawford does really well. And this kid does phenomenal business in Fresno. And I'm sure Bob Arum would do his utmost to keep it that way. But it has got to be the right fights for him because, you know, an elite fighter will beat him. But that's no slight on him. He's a decent fighter, Ramirez. And he's exciting to watch.
Speaking of exciting to watch, Gervonta Davis was also in action. He improved to 21-0 with 20 knockouts, retaining his WBA super featherweight title. And he beat Hugo Ruiz in a round. We saw that. He just banged him out in a round. But what I want to ask you about is, what did you make of Floyd Mayweather's comments afterwards on one, Gervonta Davis fighting the Japanese kickboxer, and two, Gervonta Davis not really looking like he's going to fight Vasyl Lomachenko anytime soon?
Yeah, the kickboxer, I'm assuming that was Floyd being tongue-in-cheek, because nobody wanted to see the Floyd against the kickboxer. We saw what happened to the kickboxer on New Year's Eve.
Still crying today.
Yeah, he cried in 2019 instead of singing 2019. And as a fight in Lomachenko, we'd love to see it. We want to see it. So far apart. It is just light years away. The politics in boxing here, you know, Bob Arum isn't working with his side. He isn't working with Bob Arum. Bob Arum wants to shove everything he's got on ESPN. Floyd's linked up with Showtime. You know, things can happen in boxing where you'll give something up so someone can get a fight. But this fight seems light years away from being made. I can't see it any time, certainly in the next 12 months, of either side giving them the tool to make it. The only way maybe you can happen is if these fighters start demanding. You know, it takes Lomachenko to tell Bob Arum he wants to fight, for Gervonta to tell Mayweather and Al Haymon he wants to fight. That's the only way you can see this fight happening. But even then, there's a lot of hurdles to overcome. So I'm not banking on seeing it anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Steve. Well, this week it's a cracker. We've got Belfast hero, the legendary Carl Frampton, is on the show. He talks us through that breathless fight against Josh Warrington at the tail end of last year and what his plans are now. We hear from British middleweight champion Liam Williams, and then we hear from his upcoming challenger, the ever honest Joe Mullinder. There's a bit of flashy super featherweight Zelfa Barrett and a bit of charismatic cruiserweight in James Brandt. So get those ears ready. We are about to bring them some fire. It's the Boxing Podcast. On December 22nd last year, Josh Warrington and Carl Frampton gave us a featherweight treat for Christmas. In an epic encounter for the IBF world title, Josh Warrington came out on top and retained his belt in a convincing win. While Warrington will move on to a mandatory defence against Kid Galahad, Steve Lillis gave Carl Frampton a call to find out what he's got planned.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week, Carl. Where are you at right now in terms of your boxing future?
I'm still kind of, I don't know as much as you really, Steve. I want to continue, but I want to be involved in big fights. The last thing I want to do is have three fights to get back in contention and fight for a title. So I wanna have maybe one fight and then push on and fight for a title straight after that, or potentially even just walk straight back into a title fight without being big-headed. I think I'm still a big enough name in the division to do that. So we'll see what happens. At the minute, I know as much as you guys, but I'm hoping to know a little bit more in the next coming weeks.
So if you had a fight before a world title fight, would that just be a 10-rounder, hopefully at home in Belfast for you?
Yeah, if I did fight again, it probably would just be a 10-rounder non-title fight, but I don't think I need it. I'd be happy enough to go back in and fight one of the big boys.
You're still, as you say, you're one of the big names in the division. You lost your last fight, but it was a fantastic fight that everybody loved who watched it in America on ESPN, in Britain and Ireland on BT. But do you think from seeing that fight, you could be in a position where the likes of Valdez, Russell, and of course Santa Cruz will see you as vulnerable now you've lost a world title fight to Josh Warrington?
Of course, that's what I've been saying pretty much. It happened to me before as well, Steve, when I got dropped twice in El Paso in the first round against Alejandro Gonzalez, and suddenly, straight after that, the Quake fight was made, and I was chasing Quake since he was British champion, wouldn't fight me. So seeing me getting dropped, and then suddenly wants to fight, and the same thing happened with Santa Cruz straight off the back, because I was his mandatory as a super bantamweight for the WBC title, wouldn't fight me then. And then to see you getting put in your backside, and these doors suddenly open, so I wouldn't call it a blessing in disguise, but you could almost call it that, and I think that the big fights will be a little bit more easier to make.
I take it Santa Cruz is the one you want, isn't it?
Yeah, potentially, but you know, I don't want to go chasing him, and I've talked about that fight for a long time, and I think it would be a shame if it never happened, because, you know, it's one each, you know, it's the chance to put an end to who's a better man in a trilogy, and it's been kind of talked about for way too long, but I would like that fight. But if he doesn't want to play ball, we can look at Valdez, Gary Russell, and even, you know, Warrington again at some point. I understand he's got the fake kick Galahad and stuff, but I just believe that my last performance wasn't really me, and I'm much better than that.
Before we go talk about that, I mean, you against Oscar Valdez, that's boxing porn for us fans, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose you could say that. It would be a great fight, it would be an exciting fight. Valdez is a quality fighter. I love his style. He teamed up with the best team in the world, pretty much, you know, Canelo's team. And that's going to, if it comes off, that would be a very interesting fight. He's a huge puncher too. It'll be a dangerous fight, but them sort of fights excite me a lot.
Well, you touched on the last fight against Warrington, and I know you don't make excuses for that fight, but, you know, I know your camp seemed fantastic. What went wrong in there that night for you?
What went wrong? I had a bad first round, and I was kind of chased it, and the second round was bad as well. I was hurt a few times, and I think, you know, the plan wasn't to stand and have a fight, but, you know, in hindsight, when I got clipped in the first round, I should have just held on to him rather than fire back, and it just went from bad to worse, really. And, you know, I was two rounds in, and I was hurt. You know, I was probably in a sort of position you would normally be after six or seven rounds, after two. I was feeling it a little bit, and I was just trying to chase it. So, yeah, it was just a bad night. It was a bad night. That's the thing. Where, you know, it's the very high end of boxing, and you can't always get it right. And I've just got it wrong. And that's it, really. It happens.
Was it hard to get over that fight, knowing that, you know, you...
Yeah, it was. I still haven't watched it. And because I still believe, like, without... You know, I don't want to be, you know, sound like a broken record, but I still believe I can beat guys like Josh. And someone listening to this podcast may say, well, you were battered in your last fight against them, but I got it wrong. You know what I mean? I'm much better than that. And, you know, I still feel like I've something to prove in this division.
I mean, as you say, you still got something to prove. You're still only 31. How long do you think you've got left in this game at the very top?
Who knows, Steve? And that's it. While I'm in the game and I can get involved in the big fights, I can have the big fights, and I can still win the big fights, I think I'll be doing it and I'll be boxing. But when I start to realise that just not as quite as good as I once was, then it's time to call it a day.
I know your wife is fiercely protective of you. Yeah. Is she happy for you to box on, or would she rather you walk away now and do something else?
Yeah, I wouldn't say she's happy, to be honest, but she sees where I'm coming from and she understands what I'm saying. But she would love me to retire ASAP, if I'm being honest. But, you know, that was a pretty brutal fight for her to watch. She was sitting ringside against George Warrington. I don't think she wants to see too many fights like that. And I understand where she's coming from. But I just feel like for the career that I've had, it would be such a shame to end on a fight like that.
I mean, at the end of the day, she's your wife. You know, you're her husband. She loves you. So, you know, it's quite natural, yeah. I suppose. She doesn't want to see her husband in a boxing ring.
Yeah, well, I think she does love me. So, you know, she looks after me and she cares for me, obviously. And she doesn't want to see. It's okay when you're winning, you know what I mean? But when there's fights like that and you're getting hurt, yeah, she didn't like to see that.
Before we let you go, Josh Warrington, Kid Galahad, you've made it clear you want Josh to win that fight. Does he win the fight, though? If you were a pundit on the night, who wins the fight?
I really think Josh wins the fight, and I know people are saying Kid Galahad will give him problems, but you hear all these good stories about Kid Galahad and sparring and stuff, but if you break down his record, he's done absolutely not a thing. He hasn't done anything. Even that American he fought a few fights ago, he's a bang average fighter. I genuinely believe that Warrington's going to be too fit, too strong, too determined. Galahad, you know, will get up on his toes and try and move around and try and frustrate him. But Josh's relentlessness, I think, will be enough. And I think he'll batter him. I really do. And I hope he does. And I hope he beats him well and very, very convincingly.
And let's hope you two can fight again, because yourself and Josh fight again, because you gave us something special before Christmas. Although you're most obviously sick of being told it was something special, but when the result never went your way.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's better to lose in an exciting fight than to lose in a boring fight. So that's something I'll take, you know what I mean? I'm still disappointed with the result, but it was an exciting fight and people seem to enjoy it.
Steve, I'm calling it now. Oscar Valdez versus Carl Frampton, WBO World Featherweight title, Windsor Park, this summer. Let's do it. Come on over, Oscar. You're more than welcome. What are you saying, Steve?
I'll go to California to Freddie Roach's gym and accompany Oscar on the plane to make sure he gets to Belfast in one piece. I said to Carl there, that fight will be boxing porn and we'd all love to see it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen. Frampton is still a draw in the featherweight division. He lost his last fight, but he left it all in the ring. He lost to a very good champion, Josh Warrington. And right now, the other title holders like Valdez, Gary Russell, well, if we're ever going to see him box, the WBC champion, and of course, Carl's old nemesis, Leo Santa Cruz, the WBA champion, they might look at Carl and think, hold on here. He's lost to him. I can really finish him off here. Stop him. And how good would that look on my record? And but Valdez, you think, is the easiest one to make out of all of them. Frank Warren promotes Carl. Bob Arum's top rank promote Valdez. Frank and Bob have had a long-standing working relationship. That would be fantastic for Belfast. And, you know, obviously Carl was saying, you know, a warm-up and then maybe into a big one. But if the big one came, he'd jump at it. And if someone said to him, there's Oscar Valdez at Belfast this summer, he would jump at it. And it's a fight that would sell. You know, yeah. You've got the man in the ascendancy, Oscar Valdez, against Carl Frampton, who's at a stage of his career. Well, I don't, maybe Carl isn't the fighter he was who beat Leo Santa Cruz, but he's certainly not a washed-up fighter who might, you know, say it still makes for a fantastic fight. And what an event that would be in Belfast. And if Oscar Valdez come to Belfast, he's got a fantastic personality.
Yeah, he's
easy to like. And the Belfast fans would give him respect. You wouldn't be getting like the sort of reception Acosta Zoo might have got from the Hatton fans at 2 o'clock in the morning. He'd be given a treat with a lot of respect, and he would, although he'd be in another man's country, he would be made to feel at home. It's a fight I'd love to see, and they would just meet head on. But I've got the impression, talking to Carl there and listening to it, he wouldn't mind that Warrington rematch again either. But I think that, you know, that's a long way off. I think Josh would have to get beaten or something for that to happen, because, you know, when you speak to Josh, he wants to get this mandatory fight done, and a good fight that is against Kid Galahad that we can't wait to see. And then he wants to go on to Valdez and Santa Cruz, because I think Josh is in it, you know, short-term boxing. When I say he's looking at another 2-3 years at the most.
Absolutely. Well, with Valdez, it feels like the Frampton fight would be a really good fight for him to take. Whereas before, maybe it was a kind of like a destination fight. You know, Frampton, say he was to beat Warrington, he had the belt, then Valdez had the belt. Big unification, could be Belfast, could be over in the States. Now it's a kind of, okay, let's fight Carl Frampton and let's see if I can do a better job on him than Josh Warrington did. And it's a huge fight. And then, absolutely, you know, that's something that he can do while Josh Warrington's busy with his mandatory. And then they can have that super fight if Valdez was to come through. But Frampton, yeah, he could cause the upset. He could actually just beat Oscar Valdez. And, you know, he just got his tactics wrong against Warrington. It could be that story.
Carl, in the past, Dev, has bounced back from not so great performances and gone and proven himself in fights. And he knows that if he lost to Valdez, it would most probably be the last at the highest level. So Valdez would rightfully be favourite, given the way he performed recently. He's come back from that jaw injury sustained against Scott Quigg. But nobody would write off Carl Frampton.
Absolutely. And just hearing it in his voice there, there seems to be somewhat of a kind of a spring back in his step. Whereas before, after that fight had finished against Josh Warrington, Frampton looked a beaten fighter. He looked a fighter with one, well, maybe almost 2 feet out of the door. He actually told his kids that he was retiring. So that's both feet out the door. He's just popped back in now, it looks like. But I've got to say, one of the saddest things that I've ever seen in boxing live was Frampton coming out to the ring for that Warrington fight with the music, I wish it could be Christmas every day. And it had everyone, it was a party carnival atmosphere for Christmas. Everyone was dancing, everyone was having fun. And then when he lost the fight and he was walking back to his changing room, they had him up on the big screen, and the music in the arena was the beginning of the Pogues' Fairy Tale of New York. You know, it's not that bit, you know, it's like the sad bit. It's kind of like where it's all building up, and it just looks so sad. But it's good to see Frampton's got it back. And another thing I'll add is, it's funny how the boxing world, including Frampton there, are seemingly uniting to get behind Josh Warrington against Kid Galahad. He's really crossing his fingers, isn't he?
He doesn't like him at all, but, you know, but there were things said in the build-up about, you know, you know, if you go back, Frampton was adamant he wouldn't be defending him against him, whatever.
Yeah.
He was adamant. You know, Galahad had said one or two things about them, and obviously he's touched a nerve with Carl. Kid Galahad, he seems to have that knack of knowing how to get under a fighter's skin. Mm-hmm. And then when they actually have the press conference to announce Warrington Galahad, that is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be fiery. It's one that we look forward to, but we also look forward to seeing what Carl Frampton is going to do next. And I'm sure he'll be on this podcast, cough rather than his own, which I saw that he set up. I'm sure he'll be on this podcast telling us exactly what he's got coming up when the time is right. On Friday, March the 8th, at London's iconic Royal Albert Hall, British middleweight champion Liam Williams makes the first defence of his crown against likeable Brentwood scrapper Joe Mullander. Here's what Williams had to say on the upcoming clash.
What do you make of Mullander as opponent? I mean, the one thing you said straight away on the fight being made, It's like it pushes your buttons because it's going to be exciting. Whatever happens, it's going to be exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I said to a lot of people now, I don't want to be disrespectful to him, but in terms of ability and skill, he's there, I'm up there. And that's just me being honest. But the type of fighter he gives anyone an hard fight because he's relentless, he comes forward. So fair play to him, I respect him.
We know he's tough, we know he's durable. He's not easy to get out of there. So, I mean, you're not going to have an easy night's work, or maybe not a quick night's work.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. You know, it's difficult to comment, really, because me personally, I think if I hit him on the button, he'll go. I don't care what you say. The best person he's fought is Lee Markham. You know, with respect to Lee Markham, I'm a lot better fighter than him. Just being honest again. But, you know, he's definitely tough, like, The way he fights, and he's relentless. He just constantly brings the pressure. So he's going to walk onto a lot of punches, and pressure.
He quite enjoys that, though.
Yeah, but pressure fighters. Yeah, when you're the type of fighter that he is, he takes a lot of shots. After 2, 3, 4, 5, even 6 rounds, if he's getting it, then he's getting it hard. He's going to think, I don't know if I want to be a pressure fighter anymore. I think I might back up and get a bit. But we'll see, you know, that will show, his character will truly come out then, won't it? Because I'm probably the biggest puncher he's faced. And we'll see, but look, I respect him. I genuinely think he's going to give me a good fight. He's going to make me work hard. But I'm going to come out on top.
The fact we know he's going to pour forward relentlessly, is that going to test the tweaks that have been made to your game since joining up with Dom up in Sheffield?
Quite possibly, yeah. I feel like I showed enough in the last fight. I feel like I showed improvements and I put on a good performance. But I think this is the type of fight which will, as you say, I think it'll show a little bit more of that in terms of my movement and counter-punching and that type of stuff which the English gym is sort of known for, do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think every fight is... It's a stage for me now moving forward to show my improvements and to show that I keep learning.
I mean, many people would say that last performance against Heffron, I mean, actually just showed the leaps and bounds that you've come on, probably with experience, maybe a little bit of maturity as well.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think I've improved a lot since being up here with Dom. But, yeah, you know, it's like... I think I always had that kind of stuff in the locker, but it was just
bringing out
me and in fights I've done it in the past, but I needed someone who keeps me on a leash, and yeah, a little bit more, and I feel like Dom's got the potential to do that to me, and he did do that to me in the last fight, which I believe is why I box so well, because I weren't, you know, didn't go down all guns blazing, stuck to what I was told to do. And it paid off. I got a good win.
You rightly talk very lovingly about your new camp up in Sheffield and what it's done for you. But what people probably don't realise is the hardship and sacrifice that it involves. I mean, mentally, in the say at 8 o'clock in the evening, you probably hate being there, don't you?
Yeah, I get up in the morning and I train. I'm happy as Larry. You know, all good to go for the day. Train hard, big breakfast. Think, oh, you know, if you're wicked now, good training session, good breakfast, and then. It comes to like afternoon, I'm missing everyone, and especially when it comes to like Thursday and Friday as well. I'm clock watching, counting on the hours till I can go home after training on Friday and see my girlfriend and my little girl, you know.
Just finally, I mean, the WBC, I think this week or last week, have obviously included you in their thoughts. Were they suggesting a fight with Roberto Garcia or so?
Yeah, I've seen that, and I've seen... He started piping up a little bit on Twitter. He started saying, why are you messing around with this 11-2 guy? Do you need more fights? Why didn't you just come and fight me? And I was thinking, being totally honest, I think the Mullender's a good fight, and it's a good one for the fans. If it was up to me to go and fight for WBC silver and an eliminator, that'd be my first choice. you know, you'd be stupid not to choose that, you know. But I think I'll have too much for him. He's getting on a little bit now. Martin Murray beat him.
Dirty fight as well.
Quite recent. He beat him quite recently, and I don't want to take nothing away from Martin, but he's shown his last performance. He ain't quite what he once was. And he fell a little bit short against Undam, but if Murray beat him on, you know, not his best form, then me on my best form, I should make easy work of it.
Just finally, Liam, you've been down into the auditorium here at the Albert Hall. It's quite eye-catching, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's, it looks a real special venue. Frank stated up there, it's like a posh York Hall. And I see what he's saying, because of the seating arrangements, you know, it goes up quite high rather than back. And I think it's going to be really some atmosphere in there. It's going to be a very good night. It's going to be very loud. I think it could potentially be very hot in there. So I'm excited, very excited.
Well, that was Liam Williams, who is, of course, predicting a big win on March the 8th. Richard Hubbard popped down to Brentwood to see Joe Mullinder.
You're preparing for a huge fight Friday, March the 8th at the Royal Albert Hall. And I want to take you back to December. You have just told me that you're not exactly a boxing addict in terms of watching on TV. But you would have known that Liam Williams won his fight against Ronnie Heffron. When did you start getting wind that you might be his first challenger for the British title?
I was at one of the awards dudes with my manager Andy and Francis, and yeah, they just said to me, do you want to fight the winner? I said, yeah, how much? Yeah, done.
So even with that knowledge, that didn't prompt you to tune in that night?
No. I'm not bothered. It really don't bother me. I'm not going to be, I could have gone there, I could have sat ringside, like peeping through the ropes. What's the difference going to make? I can't judge a fight. I can't sit there and go, oh, I could exploit that. Listen, he's going to punch my head in, I'm going to punch his head in.
Have you had to look at it since?
No. No. I don't need to. Like, listen, Liam's a good fighter. I'm not one of them who sits and studies your opponent. Who is he? Yeah, lovely. See you there.
Liam was very impressive in that fight against Heffron, a known puncher. I think, you know, he had 14, 15 KOs. Liam kept his distance. He boxed a bit clever. He's with Dominic Ingall now. Not being rude here or anything, your style is fairly basic, up close and personal. I suppose that's been your kind of your MO up to now.
Yeah, which is made for fighters like Liam, as you'd say. So, but listen, my tactic ain't going to change. It's not going to change. I'm not going to go, oh yeah, I'm like, we're going to shock the world and I'm going to go on a back foot. I'm telling him in a press conference, I'm going to come and have it with him. So I am. So he either irons me out or we're having a fight. It's as simple as that. I ain't something I'm not. I don't pretend to be something I'm not. But everyone can sit and watch me and watch fighters like my style on the outside and go, oh yeah, I'll pick him apart. Who has?
It's a fair comment. I mean, I suppose your thing, if you like, is jump on his chest and you're going to have to just try and draw him into a fight. Do you think it might take a little bit of time, or do you think he's the sort of fighter that after a little while he'll think, sod it, let's get in there?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Liam that. He could make it a very simple fight for himself and stay on the back foot, jab me head off, me walk onto too many shots. That's probably what Dom Ingall's saying to him. This kid's basic, rah, 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 it'll probably take 2 minutes and you stop him. Well, come on in, stop me. This isn't, like, if he knocks me out, I shake his hand after. If he don't, I'm going to shake his hand after. But it's one thing looking at it from the outside and saying, I'm going to do this. Well, when I'm on your chest, well, stop me then. Because if you ain't, I'm going to tibble your ribs and I'm going to beat you up. Or otherwise, you got to beat me up. It ain't hard to work out. So they'll have their game plan, which I'm sure it will be whatever. If Liam stands in the pocket with me, he does. If he runs, ain't nothing I'm not used to. Everyone I fought tried to jab me head off, so it's up to me to try and draw him in.
You're quite used to eating a few jabs then.
Listen, look at my face. Do I not look like I've not been it? It's everyone, all the boys in the gym, the white collar boys, the amateur boys, the pros. I'm used to walking through shots, and yeah, there's levels of whatever. Listen, when you get it, don't matter whether it's from a white collar boy or an elite, you're still getting it. You learn to get it. It depends on your style. Some fighters don't get it. I do. But he might knock me out with the first shot he throws. Like, I'm only a man, but I ain't going to quit. Put me on my ass, or I'm going to get up and come back again.
Been on your backside before?
Back when I was a early pro, I fought a big journeyman, Russian, whatever he was, and he hit me on the top of the head. I remember feeling, being sick in my gum shield, and he gave me a concussion, and he rocked me, and I didn't go down, but then I remember being in the corner, my corner, luckily enough, because I wouldn't have gone down, but all my corner was shouting, take a knee, take a knee. So I took a knee, and then got up, and then obviously done 9 more rounds and won the fight. But yeah, that's the only time I've ever sort of been hurt as such. But listen, anyone can get hurt. So you're arrogant. If you're arrogant enough to think that you can't get hurt, you're an idiot.
I'm speaking to your trainer, Jamie, and he seems to be indicating that you don't tend to make your training camps too overly complicated or scientific. I'm sure he won't mind me saying, but he said probably since you've been with him, you've sparred over 1,000 rounds and probably won, clearly won, or looked impressive in maybe 25 of them.
So you mean 25.
So you're just preparing yourself just for that scrap, aren't you, I suppose?
Yeah, listen, it is what it is. Like I said, to beat me, you've got to beat me either outboxing me and staying away from me, or beating me what I'm good at. So the only way I win is to get to you. We'll negate that then. Negate it, and you win. It's very simple. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to be old smoke's gone on the back foot and running. I ain't running from no man, trust me. I'd rather get cleaned out than run. I'm not running. And some people go, oh, yeah, you won't get to the top of the game. Don't care. I'm having a fight. Stop me, or I'll keep coming.
So you haven't got your mum in for a bit of sparring to sort of keep you on the end of her jab?
Listen, one thing, my mum would clean me out, so I'd never spar my mum. But, yeah, listen, I say what comes to my head. I probably shouldn't say half of what I do say, but I am what I am. I don't care what people think of me. And I'm honest enough, we're honest down here. Like, listen, we're in a working man's club now. That's what we are. We're working men. I say what I think. And if you don't like it, do one.
We'll stick around for now, but... Is it fair to say, like you pointed out, you know, you're quite honest about where you are and what you're at. Is fighting for the British title at the Royal Albert Hall, is that kind of, to use cliches, your World Cup final, your world title fight, your FA Cup final, that sort?
Yeah, of course it is. I'd be silly to say it isn't. But it means more to me to bring it home here to the gym and for all the boys and, more importantly, Soppy over there, my trainer. It means more to him to bring it home for the kids' classes and everything, yeah, than for me to sit under Marcel Lazen's dressing gown at home, because that's where all the others are. I don't care. What does it bring me? That's what I care about. I want to better myself, better my kids, like I said in the other interviews. But that belt will be here, because that's where it belongs. It belongs in the gym where it should be. So that's why I want to win it.
Are you a bit of a man about town? Because one thing you are known for is a fairly bumper following, certainly from the Brentwood area.
I'm known for me rascal clubber, I think. No, I'm not. I'm not at all. Like, listen, I am what I am. I've got a lot of mates. And I've always worked, when I weren't earning good though fighting, I worked in gyms. So I always knew a lot of people, always had a lot of mates in the gyms, so they all obviously followed me. I was lucky that I worked in at that time in gyms, so the whole gym used to come and follow me, and then got a big following. So I was just lucky like that, really.
And it'll all be at the Royal Albert Hall on March the 8th. It should be some night, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but don't mean I don't care if it's out there. It's irrelevant to me. Like, to me, it's just another gaffer with a ring sitting in the middle.
Royal Albert Hall, another gaff with a ring sitting in the middle.
Listen, it's irrelevant to me. I'm going to go and get my face smashed in for 12 rounds, so it's irrelevant where it is. To me, brilliant. Like, I'm sure I'll look back one day and go, oh, like, tell my kids, oh, look, daddy boxing the Royal Albert Hall, and they'll probably, you're bored of dad. Like, probably won't even know where it is. So, like, it is irrelevant, really, but it's nice for everyone who's going, I suppose, because if you ain't been there, it is a proper gaff to go to. But for me, Liam Williams is jabbing my head off in the middle of the Royal Albert Hall, so it ain't a big thing for me.
Steve, the general impression that I'm getting from this fight, when the kind of word on the street is people are expecting a Williams win, but they expect he's going to know he's been in a fight. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I expect Williams to win, and in the end, win quite convincingly. It's just, you know, the where he's boxed at compared to Joe. But what Joe does, he is so tough. He's one of the tough men of the British circuit. He will push Williams and push him, and then before Williams eventually takes over. Williams will know he's been in a fight for sure, though.
Mm-hmm. And the thing I'll add here, the weight. Now, I've heard Williams, I've heard Dom Ingle in particular talking about how Williams is a 154-pound fighter and the plan is maybe to head back down there. I don't know if that is going to be what happens, but that's certainly what Dominic Ingle wants. He wants to go back down to 154 pounds. So does that mean that Williams perhaps isn't as comfortable at the weight? Does Mullender have the advantage there? He's more settled at the weight. Is that a factor?
Yeah, Mullender's more settled at the weight, but as you say, he's more built into the weight. But you know, you still got to look at Williams is huge for a 154-pound fighter, and yeah. Also you look at the level that he's boxed at. Even the losses, one controversial, one close one to Liam Smith. You know, even Mark Ephraim was 21-0. It's just the levels he's been boxing at, and he is huge for the weight.
Yeah, he is. And the other thing, Stephen, you've said this to me off air before as well. You feel as though in this fight, there seems to be a bit of a nasty streak developing in Liam Williams. It wasn't there at the press conference. It just seems to have happened since then, because there's been all these videos and stuff going out of Joe Mullender, and Joe Mullender's, he's really funny and he's just being honest and he's saying, I'm going to punch his head in, he's going to punch my head in. It's not hard, is it? Like saying things like that. And Liam Williams seems to be snapping on social media saying, oh, he's just trying to win the people over and things like that. Do you think there's a nasty streak to Williams heading into this?
It's nasty streak to him in a lot of these fights. You know, what Liam is a very nice fella, so I'm putting him down. I get on really well with him. But whenever you speak to him, you know, you look at him in the eye, there's a spiteful, you know, all boxers have got to be a bit, you know, angry and nasty, but he's spiteful. There's a spiteful side to him. We saw it in the build-up to the Liam Smith fight. The mm-hmm. Gary Corcoran fight was really ugly, the build-up to it, really ugly. And even after the fight, the nastiness continued. You know, the Mark Ephraim fight, we had the press conference there in that hotel opposite Manchester United's ground. He was fired up what he was going to do. And he's getting that way again towards Joe Mullender. You know, he's away from his daughter, 150 miles from home. He's living in a house in Sheffield with Willie Hutchinson. And it brings out a spiteful side to him. And he's that type of fighter. Some fighters, you know, disguise that side to him well. Liam can't hide that emotion that he has.
Well, it's one we're definitely looking forward to. It's Friday night at the Royal Albert Hall, Friday, March the 8th, that is. It's live on BT Sport. It's a really big night of boxing. And that British middleweight title might just be fight of the night. Cannot wait. Zelfa the Brown Flash Barrett. He's a young man who just appears to have fallen off the radar a tad in the last few months. The Manchester-based super featherweight has had to sit on the sidelines with an injury while he watches the likes of Sam Bowen, Archie Sharp and Leon Woodstock take centre stage. Steve Lillis gave him a call to find out more about his injury and when he plans on getting back in the mix.
Zelfa, you haven't been in action for some time now. I understand you've had some sort of a leg injury. Can you give us an update?
Yeah, I caught a little injury. I just went to my Achilles. So I had to take a few months out, but I'm back now. I'm back training, back running. Just get to go ahead. Maybe April time, I'll fight around April. You know, like a 6-round, just want to get back into the swing of things, you know, dust off the cobwebs, if there's any. And then anything from there.
How frustrating or bad was 2018 for you? Not, you know, with the loss, your injury, and you saw guys like Archie Sharp, Sam Bowen, of course, Leon Woodstock, you know, I know he lost, all keep busy, you know, and get attention. They seem to have passed you by a little bit, do you think?
I wouldn't say they bypassed me because I've had more knockouts than some of them guys I've had fights, so, because I'm still dangerous, and it's just a part of, you know, boxing. Some fighters get injured, and it's just a part of the sport. Just know that when I'm back, I'm back, and I'm confident that British title belt or whatever belt that gets put in front of me, because I believe I'm better than all of them. If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be boxing.
Do you think that now you've had a loss, that it might be easier to get some of them to the ring? And especially if you've had the layoff as well, they might be thinking, oh, he's only had a 6-rounder, we'll have him next.
Hopefully they might think that. no matter what's the clout fight, I've shown what I've got, you know. I've shown what I've got. I've got a heart. I've got everything. I've ticked out the boxes to become a champion. And it all happened in one fight. And, you know, and that was me on, what, 60%. Imagine 100% is all about. Only I beat myself. Maybe, I hope you think that, but these boxing trainers and these boxers are intelligent. And I don't think they think that.
Well, since you started sparring and training full time, what's been your uncle Pat Barrett been working on you the most?
Just working on me. Just working on getting back to what I was doing good at. Just keeping my focusness. That's all. I'm religiously in the gym. I'm religiously training. Always keeping my mind active. So it's just going through the process of the healing period with my leg. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's healed. It's strong. And I'm back, man, but it's back to what we was doing. 2018 was a bit of a bum year, you know. I got a defeat, I come back, and then got injured. So that's just like brushed under the carpet now, and it's on to this year.
I mean, oh yeah, you brushed it under the carpet. But when I used to interview you before the Ronnie Clark fight, you could never see defeat. All boxers say that, but there was something about you where you knew you genuinely believed it. Did that hurt you mentally, that fight, that the invincibility went?
Listen, it hurt because obviously in any defeat, if you're not a winner, if you don't care about a defeat, then you're not a winner. No, it's a part of the sport. The best fighters in the world have been beat. It's how you come back. Like Rocky says, it's not how hard you hit. It's how hard you get hit and you get back up. So, you know, I've been hit hard. I've been beat. So what? The best fighters have been beat. My Uncle Pat's been beat. And then after that, you didn't get beat again. So until the boxing the world title, so it is what it was. You know, like, I still believe in myself, and I'm still that same guy. I still believe in better than all of my weight. And I know if I was to fight that Ronnie Clark again, I won't lose my boots. So I just know that I got beat, but it's nothing. It's nothing for me not to be the same person about. I lost my older brother. I was there. That hurt me more than a defeat. You think a defeat can hurt me like that? Never. Not in a million years, so I'm still thriving, I'm still going, and I still believe I'm better than all of them.
Has losing your brother made you so resilient and tough, to where you generally believe you're going to walk through this division?
Of course. You see the shot I got caught with? You know, the shot I got caught with, I got up, brushed it off, and acted like nothing happened. You know what I mean? I didn't think about that shot again in the fight. Some fighters would have cowered, some fighters would have, you know, like looked for a way out. I didn't. Yeah, I took a defeat. Like I said, I'm 60% off about it. If the guy beat me and I was 100%, you know what, I'd be like, he's a better man, you know, he beat me. Simple as that. But you know, things happen for a reason. But I just know and I believe in myself. I believe in myself that I will beat any of these guys my way. Give me the right time, the right preparation, I will beat them all.
And if Frank Warren said to you after your 6-round warm-up, there's Leon Woodstock, Archie Sharp, Sam Bowen, whoever, any Ronnie Clark, who would you want first out of those boxers? What order would you go in?
It'd be a hard one between Ronnie Clark and whoever is the British champion.
So would it be spin a coin between, say, Sam Bowen and Ronnie Clark?
Yeah, of course. The defeat, but then I'm past that defeat. You see, whoever's got the belt, that's what matters. I'd sit down with my Uncle Pat and he'd been in boxing before I was even born, so he'd be the right guy to point me in the right direction.
Well, tell us a bit, just going off boxing, but you've got your Uncle Pat who's quite tough, and then you've got your mum who looks after you, haven't you? Is it like, what, you go in the gym and it's all hard and no smiles and Uncle Pat growling, and I'm sure he's barked, you know, sometimes I think there's a bit of a persona there when I see him, you know, grumpy. And then you've got your mum who dotes on you and lets you have the front room to yourself to watch football and play FIFA and what have you.
Yeah, you got to have a yin and yang, I suppose. I'm my mum's favourite, she'll never admit it, but yeah, you got to have that yin and yang, and I'll still let that little bumpiness be here, man, pats like that when he's not in the gym. It's just like that too, you know, only son.
Really?
So, yeah, in the gym, it's no family, it's a job. You got to get stuff done, you know what I mean? You can't have feelings, no emotions. It's got to be done, but from when you step out them gym doors, man, feelings come back.
Does he ever outside the gym put his arm around you, give you a kiss and tell you he loves you?
Of course he does, all the time.
I just got, you know, I see Pat in the gym, don't I? I know him professionally.
I think I showed him when I got beat, and you know, when I got up, I showed him that I'm a fighter. sometimes you don't see it because you're that close.
And then by the end of this career, your mum and your uncle Pat will be even more proud of you. You might even buy your mum a big house, mightn't you?
No doubt. That's no doubt. Like I said, I believe in myself. I believe in better than all these guys. He's got your city by his height. I'm not here to be a British champion. It's something I want to be. I want to be a world champion. I believe I'll be a world champion. I'm here for my family. I'm here for my brother. So I'm here to be the best, and I'm here to take whoever's got the belt. Whoever's got the belt, I want.
Steve, every time I hear Zelfa Barrett speak, I can hear the hunger that he has really coming through. It's like that loss to Ronnie Clark last year has made him even hungrier. Can he emerge as Britain's best super featherweight? Talk to me.
Hey, it's going to take some doing. It's rich in talent, the division. That there's absolutely no, you know, he's got Sam Bowen, Archie Sharp, you know, his friend and rival, Leon Woodstock. It's a really hot, and that's just in his own, the Frank Warren stable to sort themselves out. So to come through that is going to take some doing. But he's got the hunger in for two reasons. You know, the loss to Ronnie Clark, he never thought he was ever going to get beat. That's still hurting him, despite what he says he's over. That will hurt him still. And is he the forgotten man of the division? You know, people were talking about Leon Woodstock's comeback coming back soon from his defeat to Archie Sharp. What the future holds for Archie Sharp. We're talking about Sam Bowen having a couple British title defences and going on to the world. You're not hearing Zelfa's name. Most people won't even know that since he lost to Ronnie Clark, he actually had a win last June after that fight. But he's had that win. He's had this tendon injury. And look, he's back in full training now. And I think he's just looking at Frank Warren to get him out there as soon as he can. He'll have a six-rounder, and then he'll have to go in because there's so many of these guys in this division. It's not going to be a case of – I know Frank Warren's got a lot of confidence in Zelfa Barrett, but it's not going to be a case of Frank building him up for another year to put him in. He's got a lot of super featherweights, and I should imagine after one fight, he's going to have to go in there against somebody.
I would imagine, I would imagine so as well. And you just think, say, a year ago, 18 months ago, this Zelfa Barrett-Leon Woodstock fight, that was being built up as, oh, wow, these guys could probably clash for a world title, maybe, down the line, you know, but build up their unbeaten records, and you've got a hell of a fight there. Two young, good-looking kids, two bangers, and, well, they've both taken a loss now, so we may see that fight a lot sooner than what the initial plan was.
Yeah, look, that's a fight I hope we are going to see. And you know what, Dev? When you go back to that fight 18 months, and not just the fight, they're two confident kids when they're unbeaten. And you was around them a lot, Dev. I was around them a lot. And they were everyone around them, Frank, ourselves, myself in the media, yourself, you know, in your roles, they were just thinking those two are going to meet for a lot of money. No one ever thought they would be beaten before they met to each other. And so many people were guilty of overlooking everything else around them. It was just all zoned in to, by the end of this year, it was going to be one of the big fights in British boxing. And they've both been defeated. No, I don't know if any of us saw that coming.
Absolutely, but I'm sure they are both hungrier than ever, and losses don't define you. You look at someone like Anthony Crawler, how many losses did he have early on in his career against people he shouldn't have been losing against? He went on to become a kind of a world champion, and you know, he was involved at the highest level, and he still might be fighting Lomachenko coming up soon. So you know, it doesn't define you, and I think the Crawler example is particularly good for Zelfa Barrett. They've sparred together, they know each other, so it's interesting. He won't be defined by that loss, I'm sure.
I tell you what, I was there the night Crawler lost his unbeaten record, and just sat down after six rounds looking at the fight, and I just saw it was going, well, but looking at it with one eye. So I said, oh, I'll take it, Anthony's won this on points. Someone said, nah, he's having absolutely, you know, a hard, hard night in there. I watched the last couple of rounds and he was second best all night. And then, you know, a few fights later, I was in Stoke when Frank Maloney promoted his fight with Gary Sykes and he come off second best. If somebody had told me then he would have won a world title and then been a mandatory contender for a pound-for-pound king, I would have sent them for a frontal lobotomy. So well done to you there, Dev, for telling Zelfa Barrett, use Anthony Crawler as an example.
Absolutely. Use him as inspiration. And, I'm sure we'll hear more from Zelfa Barrett very soon. And it sounds like he's looking to get back out in April. We look forward to seeing that. We sent our man Richard Hubbard down to the Peacock Gym in London earlier this week on an assignment Go and talk to some of the youngsters, the future stars of the sport, the ones that are building. And here's charismatic cruiserweight James Branch.
Here at the Peacock Gym with James Branch. Now, James, you're getting ready for your fourth professional contest. Quite a nice little venue on March the 8th.
Beautiful venue, ain't it? Obviously, I've seen a lot of the history of the boxers that are boxed there. You've got Muhammad Ali boxed there, Frank Bruno, Lennox Lewis, all legends. I believe Nassim Hamid's boxed there. All icons and people that are heroes to me that I look up to, you know, to be able to box at a venue like this, which they have as well, is an amazing achievement to me, you know, and I can't wait to go and put on a big performance there.
Are you about to do something your dad didn't do, or has he boxed there?
No, my dad ain't boxed there. I asked him, he said to me, I said, Daddy, you boxed there? He went, nah, the APA finals were there. I went, oh, I thought you was there. He went, I weren't there yet, yeah. It's an amazing venue. I went there for the first time the other day at the press conference. And just like, as soon as you walk into the room, you can feel the aura, you know, that's in the room. It's going to be a big night with all my crowd behind me and that.
Take you back to June. Nice little debut at the O2. Now, as it turned out, you bagged yourself a TV slot. How do you sort of sum up the experience?
I'll never ever forget that night, you know, my debut, and especially, it was just like I had a lot of pressure on me that night. My performance, even though, to be honest with you, the fella wasn't in my league, he didn't even land a glove on me, but on my performance, I wasn't the James Branch that I really am in that ring, but there was reasons to it. There was a lot of pressure on me. I was under a lot of pressure turning professional anyway, because under the name of my dad, people thought my dad was going to be the next big thing from this country, you know, so obviously I've got things didn't work out for him, I've got his name, sort of his pressures on my shoulder as well, signed that deal with the Boxing News. There was a lot of pressure that night, and then to go then to have my debut at the O2, but it wasn't just having my debut at the O2, it was just the cameras were in the face and that. Now, I like the cameras. I'm not saying I don't like the cameras, but it was all new to me and stuff, you know. And
you're saying you froze up a little bit?
I wouldn't say I froze up, because if he threw even more punches at me or whatever, I'd have won no matter what, you know what I mean? But it was a big learning curve in my career that night, you know.
You mentioned the Boxing News. Now, this is a feature that they've got on you, tracking your career from start to whenever, I presume.
Yeah, start to the end of my career. Hopefully, I'll be a world champion. You know, but so I'm one of the first fighters that they've done it on. They follow me every month, just basically following my career, what's happening in my life, interviewing all different people, my mum, my dad, people in my family and stuff, and me catching up and that. And it's a good, I think from the feedback I've had, it's a good feature. People enjoy it, like getting to know like the life of a professional boxer, you know.
They also catch you out a bit by finding out you don't eat breakfast.
That's true, yeah, that got me in a bit of trouble with Martin, but in a way that's another positive there, because then Martin's put me with a nutritionist, so hopefully that's going to start bringing the best out of me and upping my performance even more. So bit of bad news from our opponent.
How are you finding the transition? Like, say, you've got three under your belt now, easing out of the amateur habits and turning yourself into a pro. How's that transition going?
It's not been. I've got to be honest. It's not been. It's not been easy, because I'm very set in my ways with my style and how I box. You know, I'm a mover. I've got quite a flamboyant style when I'm moving around the ring and stuff. And obviously, professional boxing, the crowd, they're paying. It's not like any amateurs. You put on a great boxing performance and people are like, what an amazing performance. But here, people are paying. People want to see blood. You got to entertain the crowd that are watching you, you know. And that's what
that is a harsh reality, though, isn't it? It is show business, yeah. And if you want to be on TV, people have got to want to watch you, haven't they?
Of course, it's a show business, you know. And if you people, it's different. As I say, in the amateurs now, people love it. Now people love like the actual art of the sport of
purists.
Yeah, purists love like the art of the sport of hitting and not getting hit. Whereas the professional people watching the professional boxing, the audience, they're not purists. They don't even know about boxing. Like you listen to a lot of people, they don't understand like the sport and stuff, you know. But they're watching because they want to see someone get hurt, and you've got to be hurting people to get your slot on the TV.
Looking ahead to the Albert Hall, I mean, obviously aside from the win, which is the obvious one, what's your key objective for the night? Is it to stand out a bit more, the entertainment factor, or is it just to gather a bit more experience?
Oh, entertainment. I want to be. I think I am an. I am an entertainer. The way I box now. If you do watch me box, it is enjoyable. My hands are down. You think at any moment if he gets clipped, what's going to happen? You know, but I ain't going to get clipped. Yeah, so it's an experience thing, and obviously I'm trying to put my name out there. I want everyone to know who I am. I want to put myself on the map, you know. Like, even though I should be on the map with all the stuff that I won in the amateurs, I had an amazing amateur record. I broke a lot of records with what I won at such a high weight at my age, and you know what I mean. At 18 years old, the heavyweight, I broke records getting to ABA finals and stuff. The youngest ever person to do it by far, you know. But They're all records that I've broke, so I should be on. I want to be on the map. I'm up there with the top, you know.
Yeah, just to clear that up, I mean, probably your profile as an amateur was great, but probably would have been enhanced. But probably if you missed out on an Olympic cycle due to injury, that was the case, wasn't it?
I missed the Olympic cycle due to an injury. I was unlucky, really. I was just about to fly out to a tournament, and I got injured. And then that injury, then I think I was out for quite a while, you know, and I missed the whole process of the 2006 Rio Olympics. And then when I got myself back on track, I was going through the rehab up there. I couldn't. People were saying about waiting around for 2020, which I could have done, because at a cruiserweight I was still so young, you know what I mean. But it weren't happening. I'd never really enjoyed it up in Sheffield, you know. So I sort of let it go, and I knew it was time to turn professional. But yeah, my profile would be enhanced a little bit more if I did go to the Olympics and push for the Olympic cycle. But that's just how it is, isn't it?
Just finally, I mean, one of the last times I saw you, you talk about keeping your hands down. You actually had your hands very much up because you were inspiring with Daniel Dubois. I mean, that's quite something, isn't it, at this stage?
I remember you seen me at the spa. Yeah, I weren't acting flash in the ring with him, let's put it that way. It was good sparring, though. You know what I mean? I think I was good for him as well. You know what I mean? I think I'll give him problems now. He's probably not used to someone boxing how I box, you know? But no, it was good. That's good sparring. He's a very strong boy, you know? And he's gonna do well in the program.
Well, that's James Branch, now 3-0 as a professional. He'll be looking to go to 4-0 March the 8th at the Royal Albert Hall. Steve, you have the red and blue of Box Nation running through your veins. You got to tell me what's coming up on the Channel of Champions.
This Friday, very good super bantamweight fight coming up on Box Nation, Dev. Unbeaten Thomas Wald from up there in the Northeast. He's fighting Jesse Angel Hernandez. And it's a winnable fight for Thomas Wald. He thought he'd be getting a crack at a world title, and that fell through. And this is going to be some sort of elimination bout. He's 25-0, Wald. Very, very good junior amateur. We've had him on Box Nation before when he won the British title against Jazza Dickens. And this is his American debut in Kansas on Friday. Main event is an Uzbek knockout artist, Shojahan Ergashev, who his promoter says is the hardest puncher in boxing, but all promoters say that. But he is leaving a trail of destruction. 15 wins in 15 fights, 14 knockouts. He's fighting a guy called Michael Fox, who's 19-0. Only had a few KOs, very skillful fighter. And Fox is 6'4".
6'4".
And a super lightweight. So you'd imagine Fox is going to have to just keep it on the outside and make sure this Ergashev doesn't get inside and let those bombs go.
I'd imagine Ergashev. So is he another one of these Eastern European crushers coming through like Kovalev did, like Golovkin did? Is he the next in line?
Well, they're two a penny, these guys, at the moment. So, you know, you don't want to get carried away. He's doing everything asked of him. Fox is a step up for him. And he's, you know, be tougher test before we see actually what he's made of. He did have 216 amateur fights, which is, you know, is a long amateur career. He fought at major events, but, you know, only was Uzbek national champion, which is no mean feat. But he never medaled at any of the majors. So I'm not going to get quite carried away with him yet. But one thing, these showbox shows that we have on Box Nation, they really disappoint. So, and I don't think we'll be disappointed this weekend with Ergashev against Fox and Thomas Patrick Wald against Jesse Hernandez.
It sounds like must-watch television. And the thing I'm looking forward to, actually, just from hearing that, Steve, is just to see the 6'4" super lightweight face off at a weigh-in. My goodness, he must be a tower. Goodness me, looking forward to that one. Steve, this is it. This is your moment to shine. This is why the fans tune in week after week. They want to know, I want to know, we all want to know. What are you talking about, Lillis?
What I'm talking about, Dev, is Nassim Hamid, 45 this week. And I'm going to get reminisce and get a bit romantic about how fantastic it was to be around Nas. Because his career was something else. I mean, I'm not saying I was his favourite person, but it didn't mean it was fantastic to be around. And even before the career started, I met him when he was 16, when he was carrying the flag for Errol Graham, when he had that challenge against Julian Jackson. And even then, there was an air about this kid, and it just never changed throughout his career. The night I was at the night he turned professional against Ricky Beard, it was in a leisure centre, and I was there with the journalist Kevin Mitchell, and it was just chaos around him. And that continued, you know, throughout his career. And I think 12th or 13th fight when he fought Vincenzo Belcastro, a really good Italian for the European title, and played with him. Really played with him. You talk about entertainment value, the way he taunted Belcastro in the 12th round, in this current climate of, you know, people wanting to be entertained, it's the sort of thing that would have got a million hits overnight. I remember a defence against Wilfredo Vasquez of his WBO featherweight title. I think Vasquez had given up the WBA belt to face him. And on the night, Mike Goodall's ring collapsed during the fight, and it was the only respite Vasquez boxed all night. And that, to me, was one of the finest performances ever by a British fighter. You know, I've seen Naz reduced journalists to tears in Atlantic City with some of the things he could come out with. But the performances were just something to behold, the way how good he really was when he beat Jorge Sanchez in Connecticut was something else. And then when he lost to Barrera, he got away from the Ingle family then, which was the maddest mistake.
Had he fallen out of love with the game at that point, Steve?
He'd fallen out of love with the game because he had so much money, I guess. And it was just chaos around the Barrera fight. And you know what? He still ran Barrera close-ish. You know, even though it was awful that night. What was the saddest thing for Nas is that it ended it on a win against Manuel Calvo at London Arena. And he beat Calvo on points of, you know, a tough Spaniard, but no more than that. And what happened that night? Nas was booed from the ring. And I think that hurt him more than anything Barrera ever did. And we never saw him again. And it's only recently we've started seeing a bit more of him in public life. And I just wanted to pick up and not have a rant this week. What a great career it really was. But it ended his career with that sadness of the defeat against Barrera and leaving the ring to 10,000 people booing him when he lost to Calvo. He should have been one of the most loved British sportsmen of all time.
I think he is, though. I think he's brought that back around, and certainly this encouraging fighters to retire on camera and, you know, that thing, it's brought it right back around. And that, if he was fighting in this era, if he was doing all that showboating, you know, over 6 seconds, these little 6 seconds clip that go out on Twitter and then they go over and over again, he would be, as you said, he would be a viral hit. And he still is, you know, people still put up these pictures and these old videos of Nas. And what reminded me, actually, it was quite funny how it was his 45th birthday this week, and he came out famously to that Thriller. He did a whole thing, didn't he? He came out to Thriller and he knocked the skeleton off.
Kevin Kelly fight?
Yeah, that's it. That's it, in America. And he knocked the skeleton off, and there was all sorts going on. And Gervonta Davis came out to Thriller last weekend as well and just didn't do it with anywhere near the same charisma. In fact, he just kind of walked out. he didn't own it. So that really made me appreciate, you know, Prince Nas and what a showman he was.
Yeah, but, you know, he was mainstream then. He was a big star over the world, for, you know, not just his boxing skills, because of the way he put himself out there, the way he answered questions, the way if you had something to say, he'd say it. I just wonder, Prince Nassim Hamid, if he'd been around in 29 and at the peak of his powers, I'll put this out there. would there have been a bigger name in world boxing? And I mean that.
Maybe not. I think, yeah, and he was already a very big name when he was in the sport. So imagine in this era.
Social media would have loved Nazim Hamid. He would have been, he would have had millions of followers without a shadow of a doubt. And he would have been the biggest name in boxing.
Well, another week, another cracker of a show. Remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sony Dev, and at The Boxing Pod. And do leave us an iTunes review. We are bringing fire to your ears every week. Week after week, we're bringing you fire to your ears. So get yourself a fire blanket, pop it over your head, and leave us 5 stars. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.